It has been incredibly complicated, the entire appeal process. I'm happy to give you a little overview of where we are.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Thank you.
For those on the call, you will remember that Julian was arrested in 2019 and taken to Belmarsh prison on a US extradition request. The US extradition request that everyone said he was paranoid to be worried about. And we fought that extradition request through the courts. Now, we won that case in early 2021 on the grounds of the medical evidence, which showed that the particular mental health picture that Julian suffers, his autism, Asperger's diagnosis, and the oppressive prison conditions he would face if returned to the United States, or extradited rather, to the United States, would cause his suicide. Now, we won on that basis. So the judge said, you can't extradite him because it would be oppressive in these circumstances. These prison conditions will cause his death. So I'm going to bar extradition. She refused us on all other grounds, though. So we'd won on that one narrow ground. After that, the US obviously didn't like that outcome. And having had all the time in the world to make an assurance, they chose after the close of hearings and after the close of evidence after the judgment to shift the goalposts and offer an assurance saying, don't worry, we won't put him under those prison conditions after all. That was a conditional assurance and basically saying, unless he does something in the future that we say justifies it. And I think it's important to remember this history because basically the body with the power to decide to place him under the prison conditions that we say will cause his death are the intelligence services. And we now know that the intelligence services, the CIA, had planned to kidnap and kill him from the UK. So the UK courts waved through that assurance. We were not offered the opportunity to have the submissions and evidence that we've just heard overnight in relation to these latest round of assurances. We were not offered that opportunity, and the US waved through the assurance. So then we were in a position where his extradition was ordered by the Home Secretary. We then appealed that decision, saying it was unreasonable for her to extradite in these circumstances. And we appealed all of the outstanding grounds that we'd lost on in the first round of the case. So that appeal was heard earlier this year, and the judgment was handed down in March. What this court that heard the matter again last night decided was they would refuse us on all of our grounds except three. And those three were that if our argument that if Julian is extradited to the United States, the facts as they appear on the indictment, he could be subjected to an offence, being prosecuted for an offence that attracts a death penalty. And the US had not offered any assurances to that fact. And the judge was very troubled by that. So that was, we were given provisional leave to appeal on that basis, but on the basis that the courts were going to allow the US to again remedy what we say is a fundamentally flawed case by offering a new assurance about the death penalty. The other two grounds relate to his Australian nationality as an award-winning Australian journalist and the free speech protections that he will not be entitled to once he gets to the United States. So we pointed out that the US prosecutor is arguing that he will not benefit from constitutional free speech protections under the First Amendment once he's extradited to the United States. And that's on the basis that he is a foreign national, an Australian citizen. So the judge was very troubled by that again. The two judges were very troubled by that again, and rightly so. Basically, what the US is saying is that they will exercise criminal jurisdiction over journalists anywhere in the world. But once you're in the United States, because you are a foreigner or Australian or a British or any other nationality, and you publish truthful information about us from outside of the US, you won't get any constitutional protections, but we'll still prosecute you and send you to prison. So thankfully, the judges were concerned about that, but again offered the US the opportunity to remedy the case and said, well, if we want to see a satisfactory assurance. In the last month or so, the US came up with what they call SAWER assurances. In respect of the death penalty, it was a stock standard death penalty assurance, which is standard in cases involving the United States because very few countries will extradite to a country that has the death penalty. So the US is accustomed to giving these assurances all the time. We don't know why they hadn't bothered in Julian's case, and it took 5 years for them to get to that point, but we now have it. But the assurance in respect of First Amendment is far more concerning and sticky, and that's what the thrust of the argument last night was about. So what the US has come back and said in response to the concerns we've raised and the concerns that the judges agree with, that there's a real risk he'll be discriminated against and a court would find that he does not benefit from constitutional protections. The US said, well, when he comes back, he can seek to rely on it, but it's a matter for the courts as to whether it would in fact apply. Now, of course, we all know the separation of powers, so the executive can't bind the courts. But what you need to understand about that assurance is that there's a clear line of case law in the United States which says precisely this: as a foreign citizen outside of the country, you do not benefit from constitutional protections for that action, including First Amendment protections. And so what the US is saying is, this is not what we say, is this is no assurance at all. You're not giving us any kind of guarantee. It doesn't guarantee that the prosecutor is not going to run this argument, which is something they could say. They could say, we will guarantee that the prosecutor will not run that argument. But they also can't protect us against against the fact that the court might of its own volition rule that he's not entitled to those constitutional protections. So the US is in a really difficult legal position here, which is illustrated by the fact we've now got permission. It's a huge blow to their case, and one that I think could be insurmountable.
Mm.
It remains to be seen. So we've got to have another whole hearing later in the year about this. So the key question now is, will he, as an Australian citizen and national and journalist and publisher, be entitled to the First Amendment, or will he be discriminated against on the grounds of his nationality? And we say he will be, and that cannot be remedied. Of course. So we've been raising concern about the implications for the media more broadly since the very beginning, when the Obama administration opened the grand jury investigation back in 2010. So it's very serious for the media. And I think we talk about the so-called New York Times problem, a problem that the New York Times and the Washington Post have themselves acknowledged in saying that the indictment for Assange criminalizes public interest journalistic practices that we've engaged in for decades and that we do every day. So this is an indictment that absolutely criminalizes the receipt, possession, and publication of national security or defense information, which is what national security journalists and good journalists do all day, every day. What the US is trying to do with this precedent, and I want to make clear that there was no indictment under the Obama administration. This was a decision that was taken by the Trump administration back in 2016-17, after WikiLeaks published the CIA material showing the extent of US spying around the world. They really decided to pursue this indictment, and that was an indictment pursued by the Trump administration, who calls the media the enemy of the people. And so the New York Times general counsel has called that himself the New York Times problem. As you cannot distinguish between the acts of what Julian did in this case, or is alleged to have done in this case, which is to have communications with a source, to talk to a source about how to provide the information, to receive the information from that source, hold that information, and publish it. Straight up journalistic activity, and straight up activity that the mainstream media engages in all the time. So the US cannot distinguish between what Julian did and what WikiLeaks is purported to have done and what the mainstream media does every day. So there was, for a very long time, and it was quite frustrating for us, I have been a broken record on this issue since 2010. It's been 14 long years of making this point, which is you cannot somehow distinguish or put WikiLeaks and Julian over there or other them. And the fact that a lot of the media did that, they shot themselves in the foot, because that created the political circumstances that made it possible for an administration like the Trump administration to pursue this indictment, which will affect everyone.
Mm.
And it's not just everyone in the United States. So I think the US media is very alert to what this will mean for them as a precedent. But it's affecting everyone. So Julian was publishing this US information. He was not in the United States. He wasn't in the US at the time. He's not a US citizen. He doesn't have any obligations to the United States government. He's a publisher. And yet they are seeking to exercise their jurisdiction beyond their borders because of purported damage to US national security, to bring someone into their jurisdiction to prosecute them criminally without constitutional protection. Mm. And that should be concerning for every journalist and editor everywhere in the world. And that's why we've seen adverts run in the United Kingdom, in the Times, for example, saying the UK is no longer a safe place for media workers. And they're right.